Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley, joined by Van Gelder and Crack. Once again, long weekend of football action, so not too much time for pleasantries and stuff. I mean, some people are not too happy over here. Others too are very elated because our teams are very much in form. But obviously, there's no better place to start than at the Emirates, where Arsenal continued their recent good form against Chelsea by beating them 2-1. Earlier today, I saw a tweet about somebody saying that Drogba, by now, he must be fuming in his house because be like the house that he built is tumbling down. The Arsenal way, them always doing pocket inside. Right now, be like Chelsea, you can't turn them up, bitches. Because how many years has it been? Van Gelder, I think you might have to remind us. How many years has it been since you guys beat Arsenal?
Don't angry me.
There are no answer. But besides their poor record against Arsenal, Chelsea have also failed to win away against any of the top six, with the exclusion of Tottenham, who Van Gelder, as Van Gelder himself go admit, Tottenham know they count as top six. So Chelsea have failed to win away against the top six since 2021. So like the number of embarrassing stats that have just come out of this particular defeat is just very overwhelming. But Van Gelder, I want to start with you because obviously Rosinha started well at Chelsea. Now I make like things can make shaky small. Top five, top four, it seems like it's slipping out of your hands because right now I think Chelsea are now 6 points behind Man United. I think, yeah, 3 points off top five, 6 points off top four. Or first of all, how do you feel about this defeat to Arsenal with another red card? Because you are now the most indisciplined team in the league. 7 red cards as of game week 29. Is it 29 or 28? Game week 28. The record for red cards in the league is 9. Looking at your remaining fixtures, it's very likely that you guys are going to break that record. So there's a lot that you need to address. So feel free to start wherever you want to start from.
Hello to all our listeners and viewers. First of all, I'm very annoyed by the defeat. And I'm not annoyed because Arsenal beat us. I'm annoyed because they are not that good. It vexes me. Like, if they were, like when we played Bayern Munich away in the Champions League and they beat us fair and square, we were like, okay, this is the level. These people know ball play. Then play we, then beat we. Hands up, no worries. I have no problems saying that. But this Arsenal team, God have mercy upon me. Where do I even start from? Let me address this red card situation. We are victims of our own issues. That's the first problem. We are victims of our own issues. And secondly, there's an agenda against my team. That be what me, I go talk. Since that Fulham goal them disallow against Josh King, we them rep all manner of things, say we deny some 18-year-old boy in first goal, then enough will be foul. Since that time, there's been a massive agenda against my club. When we played Leeds United, even at home, Leeds United and all them are dirty antics. In the first foul of Josh Ichampo, yellow card. About 8 to 10 minutes later, I think it was Neto or somebody like that also committed a foul. That person to yellow card. It took until about the 70th minute and 11 fouls later before they booked the first Leeds player. And it's not the first time it's happened this season. It's a very continual thing. Chelsea will play. So right now, it's like we get some reputation. Say the Chelsea players being disciplined and be aggressive. So if we dey play no Chelsea player self, no touch anybody, no fiam, then they go give them card.
So what you want to talk be say, after all these years of mocking us now for playing victim all the time, right now, you want to say there's an agenda against Chelsea?
Oh, it just be this season. Maybe next season, that agenda will change. But this season, as I'm seeing it, because yesterday, you can't tell me Arsenal played any less rough than Chelsea did. So how is it that Arsenal committed one foul less than Chelsea, if I'm not mistaken? I think Chelsea committed 12 fouls. Arsenal committed 11 fouls. Some way, somehow, Arsenal got one, their first yellow card in the 74th minute. By that time, they Chelsea get four. So I don't know what else what else perfectly sums up this agenda. As for Pedro Neto, me, I said they should have removed him at halftime. I don't even know why the coach kept him in the game till that moment. He's a very silly player. The more experienced player that's supposed to be doing better. He's just been playing the fool. Me, I'm happy he has a record because he doesn't get to play for at least two matches or something like that. Make go just day somewhere. But on the football that took place yesterday, bruv, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If this Arsenal team wins the league, it's a horrible indictment on Chelsea, on not just Chelsea, but on the entire league. We're lying. They are not good, man. They are not good. They are not good at, even at 10 men, if we be serious like this small, like we equalize. If we be serious small, like we
equalize. You are talking about a team that you failed to beat in your last 11. You've lost 8, you've drawn 3.
In that 11, there are some that they have beaten us fair and square. And when they've beaten us fair and square, I've sat here and I've said, we deserve to lose. Arsenal were the better team. Nobody can tell me yesterday that Arsenal were the better team. They were not. It was a very even game. And considering where Chelsea are at, the kind of season we've had, the turmoil we've self-inflicted on ourselves, there is no way we should be going to the league leaders who are the best team in England. And for that game to be even, I'm sorry. If you are playing against this Chelsea team and the game is even, then you are not that good. Like, make we just talk through them, move on. Right? But Eja, they scored me, so what we go to talk? As for the record against the top six, me even today, Paddy. If you didn't plan to hear this stats, and I'm very, very shocked by it.
Also, somehow, it seems to coincide with the departure of Roman Abramovich. Because I think since
Roman left. No, he left. Roman left in 2022.
So that's just around the same time that this poor record started. So is it a sign that, Charlie, the Roman era has officially ended?
The Roman era ended officially the day he left Chelsea Football Club. And we got this Toboli and Berardi Bali in. Basically, that's the day the Roman ended. For me, since then, I've just known that I knew it would take a while for us to be good again. But I expected a certain level of professionalism and, you know, a certain level of like if you're hiring the best in class so that they can do the good job. And spend the money the way you want to spend it. Not these two hideous trends that you have going to pick. Who don't know their left hand from their right hand. If you leave them and tell them to build a first 11, they might end up picking 4 goalkeepers, 17 defenders, and 3 midfielders with no striker. So, as for me, I don't trust them to do anything good for my football club. But at this moment, this is where we are at. Those two games against Leeds and Burnley, where we were winning 2-0, playing well, and some way somehow still drop points anyway, is what is costing us now. You win those two games and nobody's telling you are 6 points off Manchester United because we have more goals than Man U. And you are 3 points off Liverpool that haven't been good all season. But this is what you get when you decide to throw away leads and games against teams that you should really be beating and were comfortably beating for no apparent reason. So for me, I genuinely don't think we make top five because I don't trust the coach. Not because he's a bad person or anything like that. I just think this hiring has tactically regressed our team. And I don't trust him to turn things around. Maybe we beat Villa on Wednesday and that means, well, we go level of points with Liverpool. But Liverpool, and amongst the teams vying for top four, even let's assume that Liverpool win and we beat Villa. And so it's between us and Villa. Have you seen our running? Have you seen our running? We are yet to play Man City, Man U, Liverpool. We are yet to play, we've played Arsenal. We are yet to play Tottenham. We are yet to play Sunderland. We are yet to play Everton. We are yet to play Brighton. Bro, killer, the running is not looking good. We have the worst running of any team for the rest of the season. Just if you like, just Google Chelsea PL fixtures. It go shock
I actually saw this infographic that was ranking the difficulty of all the teams' remaining fixtures. And it looked like Chelsea had the most difficult remaining fixtures of every team in the league, not just the teams chasing top four or top five or whatever. So,
see, let me read it to you. We play Villa. Then we play Newcastle. Then Everton. Then Man City, Man United, Brighton, Forest, Liverpool, Tottenham, and Sunderland. That's all after the in between there somewhere, we'll play PSG twice and Wrexham. So make I just left them for day. That's where we're at this moment. So I can't. Maybe they do. The boys decide that losing to Arsenal is the worst possible thing that can happen to them, and so they are so angry they go on a run. Me, I don't want us to go on any run. Don't go on any run. Go and lose to Man City so that they can, or this so that they can go and win the league. Don't go on any run. Just left them. Make people just do this thing. If you don't make Champions League, you know nothing will happen to you. Make just go there. The Man United, they play 40 matches this season. See the way then they play them about. If we to be seven, they play 40 matches. I mean, like we to be different. But yeah, but I just want to highlight one person. I never, ever, ever, ever want to hear any comparison by any team of their right back to Reece James ever again. I don't want to hear it. I'm not interested, and I will not entertain it. All manner of right backs have been compared. When the ball is on the floor, every time, best player on the pitch. That be all me I get on.
I think we'll give you this one small win that you can take out of the plenty defeats. But well, they also say availability is the best ability. And I wonder how available you can guarantee that he's going to be in the coming months and years.
He has been available all season. He has been available all season. This, you see, everybody, then I always agree with this. Availability is the best ability. In the season he has been available, it's undisputed. There's no doubt about it. Every time he steps on that pitch, best player on the pitch. There's not even a discussion.
So, Crack, me, I just want to ask you quickly about Arsenal. Because in the past few weeks, their form has been a little up and down. This Chelsea game, it actually looked like a potential banana skin for them. But once again, they show that champions are not always supposed to win in a pretty way. Sometimes champions have to grind out wins. So with Man City breathing down their necks, do you think that Arsenal have shown that they are still very firmly in the driving seat and they can keep Man City away?
They should be able to do that. And you sometimes win ugly. You don't always have to be on your best. And when you are the team going to win the league, everybody like brings their A game against you. Right? And since the beginning of the season, they've had something that's working for them. They are the third team in Premier League history to score more set piece or goals from corners or something like that. I saw a stat and I was like, see the people they are in with. See the people they are. Who is it? Was it Oldham or something like that?
I saw that they had was it 30 set piece goals this season alone?
They were third in. And also to see a stat that their set piece coach gets a bonus from any goal they score from set piece. I'm not surprised. Arteta has a percentage on him, just like a manager. He has a percentage from there because he's the one that brought the guy and all of that. So, but we've been in title challenges, Chelsea and all. You just have to be grinding out wins because when you're getting to the latter stages and you're still in multiple competitions, people will still be. There's a whole lot that can go on. And also psychologically, leading 9 points to it being three. Is it three or two now?
I think it's 5 points now, but Man City have a game in hand.
Yeah, Man City has a game in hand. So if Man City wins, it's 2 points from 9 to 2 points. I mean, you've been there where you are always almost at the promised land and then you falter. So it doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be pretty for them. Once they are getting the wins, I don't care. I always say that if they win, everybody, people that I'll talk about, they won like this, do like this. Me, as I said, they'll be one of the terrible winners, but history will not care. history will not care. History will be Arsenal has won the EPL. That's all that matters. If they do and they win, kudos to them. But personally, do I want them to win? Hell no. People are saying that if Guardiola wins, the EPL has been like, okay, when United was dominating in the 90s to the 2000s, did people also say that the EPL was easy? I don't care. If I've always said if Pep wins six in a row, I don't care. He wins six in a row, he still not get it to my tally. It'd be Chelsea where they pass. It'd be Arsenal where he go close up. It'd not be me. So why should I care if Pep wins six in a row? I don't care.
If them pass myself, I don't care. So,
you understand? So I'm a pure hater. I'm a hater. I just want to make my rival suffer. I personally don't, I'm not a Mancunian. I don't leave Manchester where I go to hate Manchester. I don't know why people they like project give we the outsiders say, oh, you're not a real United fan if you want City to win. Oh, boo-hoo. Where I am, do you think we think about reality? We are haters to the core. Over here, my rivals be Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool. I don't care about Man City. When Man City come?
Also, it doesn't
when,
have to make
when
sense.
When they come into the price. It doesn't have to make sense. Like, why football for like,
they can't
I don't understand people. Like,
but yeah.
Then you can't say, okay, your real rivals be, what be the, my name, these people, City or Leeds United. I don't care. I don't care about them. All I want to say, I they measure my rivals on the people where they be my friends, where they support the team with the banter. Where they go meet Leeds fans, banter and for. The Man City fans, most of them give up, say, right now, then 10 family men, and they don't get time, they do banter with you. But Chelsea, Liverpool fans, you're always getting the younger ones coming. Arsenal fans and all. So, I mean, Arsenal wins, I'll congratulate them. They've been knocking on the door, but I don't want them to win. And if they collapse, last pod I said it will psychologically fuck them up and the team will have to be overhauled. And maybe Arteta might have to go if they let this slip up. For Chelsea's match, I'm struggling to understand Van Gaal that, yes, Arsenal not play anything. They are not supposed to play anything to win. But you, Angaza, how many goals, how many shots did he even have on target? You, Angaza, you know, be set piece to you, take score.
Both Killer, of you then rob me two penalties. Score. Then rob me two penalties, but that'd be cool.
That thing, yeah, me, I get Premier League this one, I get Mata Plaza there. Because you can't be letting Arsenal, like, grapple you, hold players, pull them down. Declare Rising is a penalty. Nobody can change my mind, say, Rising is a penalty.
If we didn't score from that.
The reason why a penalty is, if, like, it be striker, we stretch in hand so, we hit him in hand, we enter the pole, VR go talk to what? It be foul. Why say, as it be the same thing, why didn't they take the penalty? Like, Charles Pedro, it was a penalty. This guy, they hold, what be name?
Saliba. He had him like a woman.
Like, come on, man. Hey. Declan Rice was facing the opposite direction, not even looking at the ball. How can you tell me that VAR, you don't watch all these things and you are like, it's nasty. Like, this thing, therefore, do something. Like, if we talk about ethical hoops and ethical set pieces, they talk about Liverpool scoring set pieces as well. They talk about United scoring set pieces. Guy, with the work, they score the set piece. We don't go enter keeper in front. When you see, say, United, they play, where we go push keeper, enter keeper? No, that's not what we do. Ethical hoops matter. It's your nasty corner you do. See what, I even saw David Moyes complaining about corner. You, David Moyes. See what he did against United. You were also complaining about you the talk. See what you did. Like, he won't say West Pass Arsenal. See what you did. But you the talk. Like, I
forget
to
David Moyes where he mentored Arteta.
Of course.
Arteta, so everybody thinks he'll be prepping student.
But they don't know. The dark arts. That way he left from. That way he played years and he left from. Like, I agree with all the people complaining about how the state of football is, and games can't just be decided on set pieces. Those ones, they are left for World Cup. They are left for knockout stages. Like, if you they play knockout stages or World Cup and that is your strategy, I don't mind. But 38 league season there, all your best chance to score is always from set piece, always from corner kicks. Like, which kind of dirty this one is. But nonetheless, if they win, they'll be deserving champions. They've been the most consistent team this season. If they bottle it, it will be the worst bottle job ever in history.
But if, I'm just thinking about something, you know, they have to play City. And if, let's say, by the time, it's still be 2 points. If them go Etihad where City make mistake. Where them concede first. Johnny Pulis go come self. Isef go can't talk. This is too much.
I'm wicked, but I cannot
do this.
And I actually see it happening because anytime there is a set piece, it's like there is a 90% chance they'll score. Honestly, because the Premier League allows a lot of nonsense with their corner kicks. Like little deflection here, some basa this one up inside. That'd be why this season they don't have any striker with 10 goals in the EPL alone. See how them are goals scatter because defender this, midfielder that, this and that, all from corner. Like it's so dirty and nasty. Like why? So I really see it happening that if you go get one goal for Etihad, then defend the whole time. And
Prep go can't talk. Say this see is that way.
He scratch your head, eh? Go scratch your face everywhere.
So anyway, moving on. Earlier this week or on Sunday, Man United won yet again, which makes it 6 wins in 7 for Michael Carrick. But there's something very interesting happening among the Man United fan base because you know how usually if a manager comes and he does a terrible job, like for example, Graham Potter at Chelsea, you find the fans being all on the same page as here. This guy, he wasn't good. He's good at this act, like all of that. But somehow, Ruben Amorim, who had the worst win percentage as a Man United manager in the Premier League era, somehow has a huge battalion of fans who are refusing to let go. And somehow, like, they keep trying to poke holes in everything Carrick is doing so far. And there was one particular tweet that, like, triggered me. I'm not going to mention the name because it'll be like, I didn't give shout-out or anything. So, it was the guy just said, the wins are nice, but I'm not convinced Carrick is the long-term solution. Let's not get carried away. And it's a sentiment that you see among a large number of Ruben Amorim supporters. And it's both very interesting and annoying to me because I feel like it's uncovered this type of notion among football fans. I wouldn't even say it's just Man United fans, but football fans in general. Because you know this thing we talk about where it's like these days, every team is doing a long-term plan, a long-term project, all of that. So I feel like it's sort of sold this idea that for you to reap the benefits of the project or whatever investments are being done, you have to suffer first. It's something like some form of prosperity gospel that if you don't suffer, you don't go enjoy. So now there's this thing among fans that I've also seen that it's kind of like if a manager come where they suffer, like if things are not going well, like Amorim, for example, things are not going well, they want to give you more time. Because they feel like they're suffering, you have to go through a difficult period before you get to the good times. But somehow, if a manager like Carrick comes and he hits the ground running, he's winning games, then it's just like this tweet is saying, it's like, okay, since you're already winning, this is the final image of what you are trying to build. There's nothing more to see. And it's a very interesting mindset to me because it sort of gives the impression that maybe if a manager who is suffering in the beginning, you can say that maybe the team is at 40% of what he's trying to achieve. But if maybe you come and hit the ground running, then he's already at like 90%. So there's not much more to see from what he's trying to do. So it's just like an interesting thing. And obviously for Man United fans too, there's also the whole Ole comparison, which for me I understand because it's a natural comparison to make. Ole came in, he also hit the ground running. He won 12 of his first 14. It looked like, yes, he was the next coming of Fergie and all of that. But again, I feel like there's not a lot of fairness when it comes to comparing Ole to other managers because Ole, in the end, no matter how you see him, no matter what you see about him, he's still the only Man United manager to give us back-to-back top four finishes in the post-Fergie era. And I feel like it's something that is glossed over very easily. Because like, if it be easy, why say more managers will do them? We've hired managers with way more pedigree than him, and they've not been able to achieve that. So that's one thing that I feel like people don't really assess fairly when they are comparing Ole to other managers. And then on top too, you know that if you are comparing Ole's win percentage to Amorim, if you were to slash Ole's win percentage in half, you'd be closer to Amorim's win percentage at Man United than if you're comparing Amorim's full win percentage to Ole's full win percentage, which is to say that Ole had a win percentage of like 55% at Man United. Amorim had a win percentage of, was it 34%? If you divide Ole's win percentage in half, that'd be like 27%, 28%. That's closer to what Amorim managed to achieve than what Ole managed to achieve if you're comparing full win percentage to full win percentage. So all that is just to say that I don't think it's particularly insulting to say that Carrick is the next Ole. Because if Carrick Gofi give me even 55% or even 52%, it will still be almost double of what Amorim managed to achieve. So I feel like, in general, like there's just not too much fairness when you're comparing certain things. Because one thing about football fans too that I've realized is that if you don't fit their idea of what their manager is supposed to look like, nothing you go do go make them rate you. So like Ole came in to United, everybody just saw him as this PE teacher, you know, be somebody where you get pedigree, you know, get this, you know, they get that. So no matter what he did, he gave us a third place finish, he gave us a second place finish, he gave us a Europa final. Like, all of those things, it doesn't matter. But Amorim, who came in, very good-looking guy, very charming guy, he knew how to work the media, he always had the right thing to say. He came and finished 15th. He lost a Europa final to the worst Tottenham team in Premier League history. And it's very easily overlooked because, again, he'd be a very charming guy. He's also won a few Portuguese league titles. So it's like, he just fits the idea of who they want their manager to be. So it's easy to overlook his negatives and try to focus on the positives. Now, when I even say focus on the positives, honestly, when it comes to Amorim, I know if you name one positive under him. Like, for every other manager, like, or almost every other manager, Van Gaal gave us a top four finish. He gave us an FA Cup. Mourinho gave us a Carabao. He gave us Europa. Ole gave us two back-to-back top four finishes. For the managers who I can say, I can't say
even Egghead win two trophies.
Ten Hag gave us two trophies. So if I'm looking at the managers who objectively, I can't point to any objective positive that he brought us. That's Amorim and that's Rangnick. So like when people are holding on to the rank to the Amorim era so strongly and they are fighting for him and all of that, it's very baffling to me because I've not seen something like this before. I can't name any other rival club that has a manager that had a 33-34% win rate and the fans can simply not let go of him. It's a very baffling thing to me, but I don't know what hypnosis this man has put the fan base under. The last civil war I've seen between Man United fans over a manager like to this extent was probably Mourinho. And like I said, Mourinho had good times. Mourinho gave us our record points tally in the post-Fergie era. He finished with, was it 83 points? I don't think any other manager has managed to match that, even though we've also finished second in other seasons. But no other manager has managed to match Mourinho's points total. So yeah, it's just an interesting thing. When I say interesting, it's both interesting and very annoying. Like, you know, sometimes people can ignore these type of things. Like, then go see people hyping Amorim, then go talk, see some of them, it be engagement farming and all of that. Mutually, even if they add a tag on the tweets that this be engagement farming, I can't see anything that is even remotely some form of Amorim praise. And then I just go ignore him because, Charlie, the man really scared me. He puts me through some serious depression. Like, there's no way I will see any form of Amorim praise and just overlook it. But crack, I know that as a fellow Man United fan, you can relate to all the things that I've just said. How do you feel about Carrick's start? Do you think that Carrick should be considered for the job permanently? All of that. And how do you feel about the whole Amorim civil war, which is still the go-on?
We got two players that were in the top five, like goal scorers last season, right? And we got a young budding striker in Benjamin Sesko. And We had a good team, a promising team. Amorim made people compare us to middle team, like middle level team, saying that they have a better squad than us. People genuinely believe. People believed Everton, Aston Villa, Chelsea really had a better squad than United.
You know, when you drop Chelsea, put it aside. I'm on the cross line.
No, it be true. No. But I've always said this. Like, I've always said it in our United group chat. And I've always said it like, bro, player for player. If you put Van Gaal, what we want to defender say we he dey injury, no?
Delete.
Delete Maguire. Delete Yoro. Delete Martinez. Go left back, even if you play Dogu or Shaw. Go right back, even if you play Mas or Dalo. Go midfield, Casemiro, Menu. Go the top. Like, I always say that, like, Cunha, Mbeumo, Fernandes. These three players alone makes every team better in the league. Tell me, say, are they lie? No, Van Gelder, tell me, say, if you get Mbeumo, Cunha, and Fernandes, you're not going to help your team.
As for your forward there, I do genuinely think that outside of maybe Man City,
I genuinely think
that you have put together probably one of the best forward lines, if not the best forward line in the league. Asterisk be Sesko, but Mbeumo, Cunha, then
that one Seth,
Bruno Fernandes, and
either make Cunha or Mbeumo start, play Ahmad. I always say that, like, we struggled last season to score goals. And it wasn't just down to the players, but it was down to formation and quality. You know, we had good quality. After we lost that cup game, that was when the guy should have gone. And I've said this already, but come back. Any United fan that was sad that Maureen left and said that guy deserved more time, it's an idiot. Let me tell you why that guy is an idiot. The guy sat in press conferences and said that if it's not going well, he quit and all those things. The first that holds himself accountable. He said his formation, he'll stick to it no matter what. He didn't do it. He's not a man of his words. He tried new formation. As soon as he got results from changing from back three, it's ego. And as a coach, if you don't win anything for your new team, whatever he did in your past, it doesn't matter. If your ego is in your way of making the team better or treating the team above your ego, then you're an idiot. The guy didn't understand Man United. The guy didn't understand the depth in which he was handling pressure. Like, United not be fucking team. United not be small club. Yes, on the pitch, on a performance not the goal, but United is still one of the biggest clubs in the world. Top two all the time, revenue or anything. That United brand alone, not be small. The guy was treating us like we'd be mid-table team. The guy refused to understand that, guy, if you come the club, yes, fine. You want to prove a culture of discipline and all those things. But it should reflect on the pitch. The guy wanted Martinez, the keeper from Villa. United said no. He wanted Oli Watkins. United said no. If you know the bomb with this guy, so Amorim fans were then they praise him for Lamens, Sesko, and all those things. Guy, those were not his targets. So those were not his targets. And sometimes I debate like Smiley on this thing, but he said the same thing. It's how you understand how cults work. This be how the Bible, they talk about false prophets and everything. You see them, but people don't care. That is how people follow cults. Because I don't know why you still have people supporting Amorim. Yes, I know they talk about engagement farming and all those things, but you're looking stupid and you're looking dense by the day. How you then say you build foundation? The foundation not job for you now, but they say you build foundation. Carrick is ripping the foundation. Did you see him win 4 in a row with the same foundation? The guy left us 11 points behind Villa. We are on top of Villa now. the guy took over. Weren't you like 8 points away from top four or something like that? Was it 8 points or seven points?
No, I think it was 3 points or so.
When he took over from Ten Hag?
Yeah, when he took over from Ten Hag? It was like seven. I think it was 7 points.
Yeah, it was like 7 or 8 points, right?
Yeah.
We managed to finish 16. How many points off top four did we finish?
Hey. We're 7th when he took over and we finished 15th, which is funny because the time he left, the same way they say he took over a very, he took over the team in a bad state, but we were 7th and he took us to 15th. Right now, as he left we in 7th, they say he left us in a good state. So which one is which? As you come between 7th, you say in a bad state. You can't leave with 7th, you say in a good state. So which is which?
The Amorim fans, they kill me because we all wanted it to work. Then they talk like we started hating him from day one. No, everybody wanted it to work out because we tire. The guy lashed Pep to for Champions League and things we're saying. But most of us, our problem was the back three. Because me, I've always said that back three before tournaments and before teams, if you Conte way, it come. But Conte didn't even come starting playing back three. That's the misconception people don't understand. Conte tweaked it based on his team and the information he had. But EPL, though, figure you out early. You had coaches coming out saying that, United, there is a gap between the defense and the midfield. So when you overload there, like, coach were giving us tactical breakdown after lashing us and things, and we're happy. People talk about chance creation. Why? Like, we never create chances. But the problem is, if we are down and we are chasing a game, the guy go do defender for defender change. Even if we lead defender for defender. The guy be Taliban. I they tell you, either Ateta and them from the come from the same club. I they tell you. I gotta be Taliban. You have all this attacking this one. Then you go the mere fact say he wanted us to lose Menu. Because he said this guy be wicked guy. He not be good. But there are more fans. If I die, then my eye die. Wait and still they continue. It be as simple as that. Then my eye die. So whatever they go do, I will continue. All your concerns you said about how they feel about Ole and Carrick and all those things, I understand. Carrick wins his next game and he has set record in EPL history. The first coach to have a better record in what, 9 games also, or 8 games, because he has won 7-1 or 1-6-1. You understand? His next win or draw, he sets record. And all these people, then they shout and all those say, hey, Carrick. We talk. If at the end of the season, they have shortlist and they vet everybody and they give it to Carrick, I don't mind. If they give it to Enrique, I don't mind. I just want a sensible person, but I don't want to make the glassness and all those people are deceived, they're my name, so I don't want them. They are not better than Carrick. Carrick take over as interim, go come back, he still not lose one game for we. He still not lose one game. Combine all in games, he coach. You not lose anything. What shows that anybody is better than him? If you bring the Enrique's serial winners and all those ways, it's not just about winners, about you. They see them again play. PSG plays a good brand of football. And Enrique is a good coach. If you bring Enrique, I don't mind. Aside Enrique, I don't know any coach where I go stick my neck out for. Enrique or Carrick be my top two. Nagelsmann, and they talk about, I'm not too... That guy plays a high line. Coach will like play high line. Basa and coach, so it'd be good. But it would, if you're a coach, will like play high line. La Liga, you get away with that. That's why the guy don't feel win Champions League. La Liga, you can get away with that because your team is better than 90% or 95% of the teams over there. And they tell you, say, this high line, you can't play for EPL. They'll kill you. They're athletes over here. Then they run. Then they can't possess ball. Then they run. They'll kill you with high line. That'd be what Ten Hag can suffer. They'll kill you with high line. So, coach, we like highlight for me, and I don't. But the United fans, when they behave like that, it made a kind of time. Chelsea appoints this guy, Obi names him, the former Brighton coach.
Potter.
Same thing. They face their own Potter-ish. Same thing. But girl, that I know. After now, nobody they hate Potter pass. You understand? If it's the same issue.
The only other coach I hate more than Potter is Frank Lampard. That's the only other coach.
Hey, really?
Oh, super Frank Lampard.
Ah!
America will come from.
I don't even want to go into that one too much, but I don't think people were fair to Lampard because He came into your team when you had just started your transfer ban. So his job was just to stabilize the team through that transfer ban period. Am I lying?
He got you top four. And the first season he got us top four, I was happy with it. Then the next season he started playing shit. Then
but you know, by a player.
You see the same. No. But we get transfer ban, so probably that. But you see. No, but that time we had already pre-signed players. Then sign Ziyech, them boys. Harvest them. Wait. You see, my problem with him was, first of all, he tried to do the same thing Andre Villas Boas did. Alienate the senior players, Giroud them. The time you see, he body they have a way, you know, they work. Where he started to bring them back. Oh, you can play now. Secondly, he is one of the reasons why the Chelsea fan base, the same way that they do this, I'm going to say, you know, the Bab, it'd be the same thing. At the kind of time they hired Tuchel, Chelsea fans deliberately hated Tuchel because they sacked Frank Lampard. They couldn't accept that Frank had done a good job and it was enough and he had to go so that we will move forward as a club. And that is the thing that happens to my United fans. Some people buy stocks in Amorim. Where they don't want to let go of the stocks. So, see, last season, when Chelsea hired Maresca, the Poch fans in Chelsea, everything Maresca did is because of the foundations of Poch. It's because of Poch. And now the team was on the app. And the team was already on the app. That's why we were doing well. And that's why Maresca is benefiting from it.
That foundation argument is one of the silliest arguments I ever hear in football.
This guy, as at match, we were still like 14th. No, don't angry me. Where's the foundation, Papa Bay?
You see, let me give you an example of a kind of good foundation, but it was poor recruitment of coach. United. I know United's team, Moyes took over, was an AG United team and all of that, but they had just won the Premier League. So that'd be some foundation you go feel build on because you had experience and all. But you came there comparing Vidi to Jadielka and all those. Mabodam. Now, this is what have they achieved that you're comparing me to all. Like, that is something we had it wrong with the coach. But then be Pepe, they left Barca. You understand? Pepe, they left Bayern Munich. Like, them some people they left winning culture left behind or winning team. That'd be some foundation way, like, Charlie, if the next coach. They take them win. I go, Vitor say, oh, Pep left a good foundation. He left a good team. But I'll not be somebody who is shy, where they sack him, another team, another coach getting the best out of them. And they can't talk, say, it's just like your old manager, shy, you appoint me to your company. I come the same team, I motivate them, bring in new ideas. And since where they work with happiness, the culture change, where they make profit, then they can't tell me, say, because he hired these people, he be in foundation, what about them? that foundation argument is the best we pass.
Also, one thing I would say about Man United fans is that I think they have this fear of sacking managers, and that also feeds into this whole Amorim situation because Man United fans somehow think that every manager is supposed to get like 10 years like or Fergie. 15 years, like Fergie. But for me, sacking managers has never been the problem for United. And people like to use this thing that, okay, we sacked this person, it didn't work, we went to bring this person, it didn't work. I don't think the sacking managers is the problem. I think the extremes in the different managers that we have is the real problem. Because first, you have Moyes. It doesn't work out. So you sack him and you get Van Gaal. Van Gaal and Moyes is a very extreme switch. Then from Van Gaal, it doesn't work out. You have Mourinho. Now from Van Gaal to Mourinho, that's another extreme switch. Mourinho comes, they sack him, then you go to Ole. That's also another, I wouldn't say an extreme switch in terms of the fact that Ole was also a more counter-attacking manager. But if you look at the job he did or the work he did at his previous club, Modi and everything, and how he even talks about football, I think his ideal type of football is Klopp type of football in terms of high pressing, high energy and everything. But I don't think he ever managed to implement that style. But what he did worked for him to some extent. So yeah, Ole also came in. That wasn't an extreme switch, but that was also a very different switch, at least if not in terms of style of football, from managerial style. So he went from Ole to Rangnick. Rangnick, the job of an interim manager is just to come and stabilize the team, like what Carrick is doing right now. But Rangnick thought he could come and implement his Leipzig style at United immediately, and that was also very different from what Ole was doing. Then from Rangnick, we go to Ten Hag, which was also another, he also came with a previous style that he was known for, but he also came to adapt, which I don't have a problem with at all, because in his first season of adaptation, it worked very fine. The second season was when he decided that, okay, now he wants to try and start doing things his own way. And it's like he got caught in between, because it's like he was trying to sign players that were used to what he is used to, but he was still somehow hanging in the middle of just stabilizing the club. And I don't know, he just never really settled on a particular identity. And then from Ten Hag, now you come to Amorim, who just flips everything over. Now you say they can't play back three. So you can see that every manager, you don't see any continuity between the managers that you have. Take Liverpool moving from Brendan Rodgers to Klopp, for example. If you compare Rodgers' football to Klopp's football, it was all very high-energy football, very high-pressing, running. Like, their style was similar. It's just that the quality of implementation was higher. And similar to what Klopp left, Slot, I know that Liverpool is not in their good books right now, but Slot didn't do too different from what Klopp was doing. So it's like you see some form of continuity in what they were doing in terms of the managers and their style and everything. Man United's problem has always been moving from one extreme to another. And I feel like fans don't really understand that, because I think that one good thing I would say about the recruitment and having a sporting director, at least the type of sporting directors that we've gotten and the type of players that they target, is that if you're able to keep signing good players and good players who are able to have a certain level of chemistry, sacking managers wouldn't have that huge of an impact on your results as they do when you are just signing players for different, like at different points. You just sign one day, you're signing possession football players like Van de Beek, then another time you sign counter-attacking footballers like Di Maria. Like, there was no cohesion in the transfer policy. So, like, if you have a certain level of cohesion in your transfer policy and you're sacking managers, you realize that the extremes are not as huge as you see, like, currently. But anyway, we spent too much time on Man United. Let's switch quickly to the Champions League draw, which happened over the week, last week. And I don't even know what to say about this draw, because I don't know whether we've seen something like this before. Because somehow, all the teams that have Champions League winning pedigree have all been put on one side of the draw. You have PSG versus Chelsea, who are both Champions League winners. You have Galatasaray versus Liverpool. Galatasaray didn't win Champions League before. I don't know whether in the European Cup days they win some. But in those days, they were also a team with huge Champions League pedigree, with huge European pedigree. Galatasaray versus Liverpool. You have Real Madrid versus Man City once again. The funny thing about that particular draw is that when they were interviewing, was it Abeloa or something, about the draw, he said, everybody knows that they'll just give us Man City again. And true, then give them Man City. And the funny thing about it is that Real Madrid, it's very obvious that they're afraid of Man City. And it's the one team that they're afraid of that they don't even hide it. Like, they actually shake when they go and face Man City. They've already faced Man City in the group stage this season. And they lost 2-1. And the funny thing is, in the Spanish media after, the Madrid media in particular, usually if Madrid lose a big game, the whole narrative is that Madrid, big game, the world is falling, it's a huge embarrassment. But the narrative after that particular game was like, okay, they didn't really disgrace us, we managed to do well, it wasn't so bad. And that should show you how much Madrid fear Man City. So anyway, that is, by the way, Madrid versus Man City. And then Atlanta versus Bayern. That's on one side of the draw, and they are on the same path to the final. And then on the other side of the draw, you have Newcastle versus Barca. You have Atletico Madrid versus Spurs. You have Bodo Glimt versus Sporting Lisbon. This would be pure Europa League draw, by the way. And then you have Leverkusen versus Arsenal. On that side of the draw, you only have one Champions League winning team, which is Barca. So if Arsenal win their match against Leverkusen, they're going to face the winner Sporting versus Bodo Glimt.
Imagine.
Before when they get to the semi-final, then now they can possibly face maybe Barca or Atletico Madrid, which for me are the only realistic teams that can knock them out. So in truth, like, Arsenal have a clear path to the semi-final. Some people might say to the final. But for me, I want to give Atletico Madrid and Barca some form of respect for the fact that Champions League pedigree, it always counts to a certain level. And Atletico Madrid, they are very fond of knocking out English teams. So, obviously, the draw had a lot of people talking. Arsenal have been given a free path to the final, all of that. I want to start with Van Gelder. How do you feel about this Champions League draw? And do you truly think that Arsenal have a cakewalk to the final?
Yes, they do. I mean, the Champions League, to win the Champions League, one is either you do it the hard way, the very, very hard way, or you get the luck of the draw, which brings you to the final, almost carries you at least to the semi-final, right? But then again, it's also the Champions League, so anything can happen. But considering the two sides of the draw, Arsenal have it very, very, very easy. Because think about it. If Chelsea, let's even take Chelsea, right? Let's assume that somehow we gain some massive form. If we beat PSG, we have to play the winner of Liverpool or Galatasaray. Let's assume that's Liverpool. If we beat Liverpool, we have to play the winner between... on the other side is Man City versus Madrid, Bayern versus somebody else. Let's assume Bayern has won and either Man City or Real Madrid has won that game, right? Let's take Madrid or something. Madrid has to play Bayern and one of those two will beat Chelsea in the semi-final before... One of those two will make it to the final to play either Arsenal or whoever it is that makes it to the final from there. I mean, how is this any fair? How is this any fair? So at the end of the day, for Chelsea to make it, even just make it to, not to win it, to make it to the final, we have to beat PSG, Liverpool or Galatasaray, either Man City, Bayern Munich or Real Madrid. And then... you make it today. Who is Bayern Munich's opponent? Because I know that one too is a tough draw.
Bayern, they play Atlanta, which they
So let's assume Bayern beats them. So look at it. If Chelsea doesn't make it, PSG has to beat. Basically, if all the English teams make it from their year, except Chelsea, PSG literally has to go through Chelsea, Liverpool, and Man City to make it to the final. I mean, how is that any fair? So, for me, I'm just looking at this draw and saying to myself, like, I don't know who did it. I don't know how they ended up here. But, I mean, it does throw up some very enticing and good games coming up. And you can look forward to that from the round of 16. It's going to be a bunch of good matches all the way through until you get to the final. Well, on one half of the draw anyway. The other half, they should figure it out among themselves over there. Because... Is anyone's if Arsenal are serious, they should make it at the very minimum to the semi-final. If they go and play, you see, the only hope, tinge of hope I've got is that Bodo Glimt are doing giant killer things. So maybe, just maybe, they do something against Arsenal. But over two legs, I don't see it. I don't. If it was a one batch, and then is that it? Then maybe, but over two legs, I don't see how they even. Show Arsenal anything, but you never know. This is the Champions League, and Arsenal are weird. They can choose to not take it serious, or they can choose to listen to Corey and say, you know what, let's leave the Champions League so that we can concentrate on the Premier League and move on with life. And yeah, and then they'll just forget about it. But the draw, I don't know how they did it. It's not great, but it has some of the pairings are really nice and juicy, and I look forward to it. Bring it on.
So, Van Gelder, now that you've seen that, like, you can admit that Arsenal have been given a cakewalk and all of that, now I feel like I've trapped you small. Because remember in the Club World Cup, as Chelsea faced Flamengo, Etunis, Benfica, Palmeiras, Fluminense, where you take enter the final, where the talk say, they give you free run to the final. They do your mouth cut. You say, no, it'll not be true. And you only face what is in front of
there,
you.
What happened there is that we lost. So I'm not disputing that Arsenal have a good run. They have a good run because, let's not forget, they finished top of the Champions League. They won all their games. So it is basically a reward for them winning all their games. In the Club World Cup, we lost to, what's the name? Flamengo. And it was that caused that. If we hadn't lost to Flamengo, we would have gone the difficult route. But somehow we lost. And after losing, we only played what was in front of us. So Arsenal will play what is in front of them. The question is whether what is in front of them will provide enough competition to stop them or not. One of Barca or Atletico has to stop them somewhere. And then we'll figure it out at the end. If they don't, then one of the big boys on this on our side of the draw has to basically do, ah, shit, here we go again, and do the job in the final. It's simple as that. Because me, I'll be all right. If they win the Champions League, I'll be fine. But I'll not be fine. Because what do you mean Arsenal has a Champions League? What does that mean? Why? Where is the world going? Is this the signal for World War III? Is this the signal that Jesus is coming? Because what? This year is not good for me.
Crack, with this Champions League draw, do you think Arsenal are now the favorites to win the Champions League?
No. But then again, agenda is agenda. They have no excuse not to make it to the final. Because in terms of form, they are the team with the best form in the Champions League this season. Right? They led the table. So undoubtedly, if you have to go by the informed team, then they're for winner. So no excuses there too. If they go meet Atletico or Barcelona, I beat them, say they're a big club. They are supposed to overcome that. Anybody they meet, they are supposed to. They said this is the greatest Arsenal team we've ever seen, right? Or one of the greatest teams, not even Arsenal teams ever seen. So, team like that, the team will not win anything. They say the greatest team ever assembled and since. So, I just expect nothing but greatness. So, me, if they accommodate them for semi final, I still go laugh them. Technically, they are supposed to win the greatest team we've ever seen. So that and the WR ghetto. Because you couldn't have asked for a better draw. And after you qualify to Sporting or Bodo Glimt, bro, cool chops. Then you go meet Atletico or Barca. I don't care. Them all to right now. Why? Chelsea not last Barca already this season. Why Arsenal not with it? You understand? Atletico Madrid not day form this season. We all know this. Then pick up recently, but still, then my level will not be Arsenal. So, no excuses. We've seen Liverpool do it. We then go find out back to back and things. Why can't Arsenal do it? They have no excuse them to do that. That's all I have to say.
So, anyway, still on the topic of the Champions League, there was just something that I wanted to touch on personally because one of the biggest controversies in football over the past 2 weeks has been the racism. Situation involving Benfica and Real Madrid, specifically to do with Vinicius Jr. and Cristiano of Benfica. I forget his first name. But in summary, basically, I think everybody knows the story of that. Basically, they say Vinny says Cristiano called him a monkey when he covered his mouth with his shirt and all of that. And some of the Real Madrid players say they also heard it. But for me, the main issue was that ahead of the second leg, UEFA gave Cristiano a preliminary or a provisional one-game suspension ahead of the conclusion of their investigation? Because as things stand, the investigation is still ongoing, so we still don't know whether he's truly guilty or not. We can all have our opinion on whether he looked the whole situation and looked guilty. Like, if you ask me, I'll say the circumstances of how everything, from my layman expertise as a body language reader and everything, he looked very guilty to me. But for me, the situation where UEFA banned Cristiano, even though they've not concluded the investigation, even though I can guess why they did it, which is probably to avoid a hostile atmosphere as the Bernabeu, I'm not too sure that I agree with that decision. Just because me, I'm always somebody who is all about setting precedents and all of that. It's not just about looking at one situation in isolation because everything is linked to each other. One situation leads to another. So it doesn't really sit well with me that you ban a player for one game pending investigation. Because now what happens when the investigations come out, and it's very likely that the investigations will come out and we'll say there's not sufficient evidence to prove that he was guilty. And then what happens? Like, in the end, you've caused Benfica to some extent. They can argue that them missing him for that match affected their chances of winning, which is a valid argument to make. So for me, I'm not too sure that it was a particularly good decision to make. I think in any case, even if they hadn't banned him, Benfica would have read the room or assessed the situation and maybe kept him on the bench. Maybe they would have brought him on as a sub or something. But I'm very sure that he wouldn't have started the game even if he was available. So for me, it was just something that I saw and I was just thinking, this is not really something that I want to see. Because particularly if you have... I always want to put myself in their shoes, or I want to put my club in their shoes. If it was something that happened to my club, I'm not sure I'll be happy about it. Because remember, United ourselves, we've been involved in a similar racism situation. That the only thing is that everybody just knew that the player involved is unlikely that it was genuine. And that was Cavani. He already had a lot of respect in the football world. And there was this context, there was this explanation that came about that in their language in Uruguay, calling somebody Negrito is a very common thing. It's not interpreted the way it is interpreted in England. And
this was so between he and his friend also.
Yes. So like I was saying, it was something that when everybody just assessed the situation, they just realized that this just be typical case of the people on the ground, they understand the situation, but the higher ups, they just won't do corporate things and just won't do whatever they want to do. So in that regard, I know that this one there is a very different situation. But for me, the whole thing is that the idea of banning a player before investigations have concluded is not something that sits well with me.
I do agree with you on it, because I still believe equality before the law. Once you've said that you're going to investigate, let's wait for the findings, because I still believe it's performative. I still believe they are setting a bad precedent. Yes, the guy looks as guilty as hell, but everyone is guilty. He's innocent until proven guilty. Do you get it? Like, yeah, him, when he said he called him a fag. That one, he said it. But why is it that this one, you covered your mouth? And so, like, I mean, yeah. And also, it's because for the first time, you have Vinicius that he has been wrong, that he has majority on his side. Because this is the first time, like, he has overwhelming support from people. You understand? But the situation here, Argentines are racist. I don't think we should. Unless if you go down their history and all those things, how they clear the blacks and all. So I don't want to go down there. The person that shocked me the most was Mourinho's comments on celebration. That was quite disappointing and shocking. He enforced that thing that everybody was told, a white person is low-key racist. He just hide it and try to all those things. But for something like that to come out of Mourinho, did he just forget his past? Did he just forget who he was? Like, who celebrates passionately, like, in the face of opposition fans? He beat Barcelona. He went to taunt them on the pitch. Knee slide at Old Trafford, taunting Arsenal fans. Like, a whole lot. Like, you live on those antics. When you were at Madrid, you were poking people's eye for El Clasico and things. You were in there, like, you get it. But you were getting away because of your skin. Let's keep it like that. You made it. Mourinho confirmed that Mourinho got away because of his skin. This was the bad time for you to come and talk about. Why should you go and celebrate in front of? Are you mad? He scored a goal. So, are you mad? Like, when did we allow this? Why should we celebrate in the way that Messi score for Bernabeu? He not come out in Jesse take show Madrid fans. So if at that time they were abusing him and all those things, will you say it's okay? They dubbed it one of the best celebrations ever. One of the best celebrations ever. But somebody know if you go stand corner flag then dance and things. Someone, you know, if you go spread your hands in front of this one. As Rooney said, they see these celebrations in World Cup and things and all of a sudden, why should somebody be punished for his celebration? Like, he didn't go standing there doing fuck you and all those things. He didn't go antagonize them. He just celebrated. I don't get it. You know, be saying like he ran from one corner to the other, like the way Adebayo do us now. That wasn't it. Even that one said still, it doesn't still call for racist chants. So, I still believe that stronger sanctions should come after investigation. I just don't like how UEFA generally, or FIFA in itself, let me stick to UEFA, generally deals with racism issues. I don't like, it's still performative to me. I never liked the fact that people were kneeling down in support and all those things. That wasn't my issue because it was still happening and it will still continue to happen. At least the league that I know that they try to fight it is England. I know now and then they go ban you even and they be so like they go sack you, ban you and all those things. Italy there, then go write you letter, tell you say it's normal for you. Either you accept it or go away. Do you get it? I mean, yeah. So I
when it comes to this, you know, happen.
Yeah, Spain there, then my president now will can tell you say it never happened. You get it? So I mean, like Charlie, I was more disappointed in Mourinho than even the Argentine guy. As I know, say be Argentine, I say, oh, you Mourinho, your past everybody respects you because of your relationship with blacks and African players and all your life, like all your coaching career. I did get it. So ACM calling you a father, this has been well documented and all those things to you too. Dude, that was more disappointing to me that because the guy right now, we not get audio of him or what he talk. He cover him off. It's his word against Vinicius. They should still investigate. But he looks guilty as fuck. But Mourinho's one day, everybody hear him. That is why I'm focusing more on Mourinho's utterances. Now, that was more disappointing. Like, I was more disappointed in Mourinho than... Yeah, so I still believe the sanction should have come after investigations, not this performative thing of suspending him because there was pressure from everywhere. There was pressure from everywhere for them to do something, but that's not what good leadership is.
So, last topic before we close. Yet another World Cup is approaching, so yet another Black Stars brouhaha. And this, again, Black Stars budget. Every time when the World Cup is coming, there's always going to be controversy about the World Cup budget. No matter who they empower, no matter what, that one, they're standard. So the budget was released. They put out the budgets for approval from the ministry. And the total amount was $14 million. First of all, let me just say, like, the total amount is not even a problem, a huge problem for me, because in the end, it involves them getting to the final. So you know what I mean? Say the $40 million, they will get them all regardless. Like if they get to the final, then go unlock the full amount. But the most interesting thing to me about the budget was the part to do with the payment to the Black Stars Executive Management Committee. And that Executive Management Committee has 6 members, chaired by Randy Abbey, who is also the CEO of Cocoa Board. And it also has Stephen Appiah on that committee. And they've been allocated $310,000. Considering there are 6 members on the committee, each person is walking away with $62,000, which is for like a minimum of like, let's say, 10 days of work, assuming we get knocked out from the group stage. And obviously, this is not something that Ghanaians are going to let slide. So it's been one of the biggest talking points for the whole week. And me, let me just start with Van Gelder, because me, like, my mind cannot comprehend that amount for that period of work. So,
when we speak the truth, people say we shouldn't say it and that we like to do agenda. Let's start from the fact that the Cocoa Board CEO is the chairman of the Black Stars Management Committee. We did the struggle plus cocoa farmers. For months, some of them have not received their money. I saw a news article saying that Cocoa Board has given sponsorship to Black Stars. Like, is it like conflict of interest is not in the dictionary of Ghanaians, or we just don't care? At what point, at this moment, we have 3 months. Like, people, I don't know if maybe sick of adulting or sick of America, then Mexico, or they no correct, then they release bombs. So the excitement of this World Cup below or what? But it's 3 months to the World Cup. Or maybe 4 months. So the fans are 4 months. 3 to 4 months to the World Cup. We are about to enter the first international window of the year because we're already in March. So Black Stars are going to start playing. The focus of the management committee chairman should be on how best we can get our fortunes up at this World Cup. But our management committee chairman is busy negotiating cocoa prices. And we think it's okay for him to be there. Secondly, what exact work do they actually do at the World Cup that one person cannot do? That they must be paid $61,000 each. Other nations have one team manager and that's it. Nothing like a management committee or whatever. A team manager and that's it. And even most people don't know who their team manager is. But he's there making sure that the players have their boots, where the players are going to sleep, everything is organized, you know, everything. There is a structure within the FA that handles logistics and planning and travel and all those things. So what exactly does the management committee members, what do they do? Because it's not like they're the ones that are going to carry the kit or they're the ones that are going to book the hotel. So what's the point? We like to throw money at things that, frankly, we have no business throwing money at. We like to give money. I'm pretty sure somebody has budgeted that this year, 61,000. Anya, 60 BTA, Peppa. Maybe this house, this land, my child's school fees. And I get it. So it's like, but, bruh, we don't have the money. The likelihood that we'll make it out of our group is next to slim. Like, we most likely won't make it out. So, even if it's 30 million for the whole or 40 million for the whole tournament, group stage alone is how much? It's like 6 million, no? 6 to 7 million. 6 to 7 million. Like, let's be serious. Randy Abbey has no business staying on as Black Stars manager. If he wants to be Black Stars manager, he should quit. Or the president should have sacked him already for the woeful work he's doing at Cocoa Board. But if they've left him keep on, then he should voluntarily quit as chairman and say, look, my hands are full. I don't have the time to dedicate the level of attention that an institution like the Black Stars deserve. So humbly, I resign. And then let push someone else there. I don't want the management committee to exist, but knowing this country, it will exist. So let them at least put somebody who can dedicate his full attention to the Black Stars whilst they prepare for this World Cup. But with even that simple integrity that we will have to do this, we can't. We can't. I saw a video. If the Dayu goes to the World Cup, he can mobilize all the Black Stars players to put their... Let the management committee, they didn't even do anything. They should put their city water, their 300 water. They should donate it today to the Mahama Care Sports Fund or whatever they call that. They should donate it first. Then after that, maybe the players can say, oh, that we to give half of our bonus. At least then we'll see that they've done something. Because you are traveling free. As they're going, it's not going to be economy. It's going to be business class. They're going to live in good quality hotels. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner paid for. Tickets to the games paid for. Have you seen the tickets to the they'll possibly even get them the visa from Ghana too. For those who don't have foreign passports, they'll get visas from Ghana paid for by the government. So what exactly are they going to do that on top they'll get 61,000? What? Let's be serious, Master. Let's be serious. Let's be very, very serious.
So on this whole thing, my main issue, like Vangeta was saying, was apart from the fact that like I have an issue with the amounts being paid in general. Like that one, even if I heard that the management committee combined, then they collect $60,000, I will still have a problem with it. So the fact that it's $60,000 each, that one said they make them even worse. Now, my biggest problem is that Randy Abbey, once again, CEO of Cocoa Board, chairman of the executive committee. It's two things. It's either the chairman of the executive management committee position is not a very important or responsibility-heavy job. So it's something that you can just do on the side. Oh, if you get some free time, if you come back from work, then you just do some 30 minutes on the side. Your weekend, then you just put some small efforts inside, make a few calls, hold a few Zoom meetings or something. So if that's the case, then what's the justification for paying somebody $60,000 to do it? Because that's my whole thing. $60,000 is basically, you could say that's the amount that certain CEOs of other state agencies are making in a year. So if you are saying that this is a side gig that you can be paid that type of money for, then it means that it's either that job is not worth the amount you are paying the person, or Randy Abe is not putting his full effort into the job to do it to the best of his ability. It's one of those things. It's just one of those things. It's not possible that the job is so important and so responsibility heavy that it is worth that type of money, yet you can just do it on the side, like, especially considering everything that CocoBot is going through right now. It just doesn't make sense to me that you are telling me that somebody can balance those two roles. It just doesn't make sense. So for me, the bottom line is, first of all, Randy Abe, he has to give up one of those jobs. Whether it's CocoBot and go sack him from there, or it's the executive committee chairmanship where he go step down. For me, if in an ideal situation, the two or he go lose all. But I know that it's probably not possible. So if that's the case, the executive management committee, I go step down from the CocoBot job, because I want it to look like the heat today there. Sooner or later, he might lose it regardless. So the executive management committee job, maybe that one said it gets more job security for there. That one, you know, obviously if they give you $60,000 for there for little work done, it means the scrutiny for there is very small in the case. So like the whole bottom line is that one of those rules must go. And that budget to, like Van Gelder is saying, ideally that committee will not exist. But for the fact that it exists, they have to be paid some amount. So I'm not going to say they shouldn't pay them at all, but that amount should be reviewed to a far more reasonable amount. I don't see why, in any case, I don't see why when they are paying executives for these things, they pay them as if they are also part of their team. Because it's almost like, because the players, then they go pay them $100,000. So the executives too, make them pay them $100,000 or make them pay them close to $100,000. Because if you remember, in 2014 at the World Cup in Brazil, that $100,000 saga where it disgraced the whole country, the executive members of the team also collected, and the coaching staff and things also collected $100,000, which makes absolutely no sense to me. So I've never understood the reason why somehow they value the job of these executives on the same level as the players. Because for me, the executives, it's a salary job that they are doing. It's something that they are getting some form of, I don't know whether it's a salary job or it's an allowance that they are paying them a month or something. But it should be treated as any other public servant going out to the country to serve the country. Pay him per diem. Whether the per diem, they go pay him $300 a day, $400 a day, or whatever it is pegged against. That, for me, that's the only sensible solution. I don't see any world where it makes sense that you pay somebody the amounts that other CEOs are making in a year for 10 days of work. If you won't add training camp and everything, even if it's 1 month of work, 2 months of work, it will still not make sense to me. So for me, that's really the bottom line. Like, the budget should be slashed like by 90% on that particular line item. Randy Abe has to lose one of those jobs. It's as simple as that.
We have accountability issue in this country, and the mere fact say I don't like the previous government and I voted amount doesn't mean that I'll not hold you to the same standard. Because the reason why I voted this one out was because I didn't want to see the same repeat things again. The bottom line of all of this thing is corruption. We've normalized it. This is why GFA to go talk say then not the old we then be private entity. And the only old explanation to FIFA, not us. If you come and tell me the context of, yeah, technically, then they borrow the money from the sports authority, they pay back and all those things, blah, 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 boohoo. We've seen some of these accounting issues where the GFA money is, you know, they come back. FIFA will release money, they will tell say that they take a good project and they enter them in my pockets. So it's not, they are all in cohorts. Like, they are all in cohorts of these things. So then they. And if it was MPP, we will criticize them. Why can't you criticize NDC? That's one thing I don't like. If I don't like the previous administration, it doesn't mean that this party that I voted for, I'm not a card bearer member. You see, we have to move out from being political to just caring about the nation. Otherwise, we don't go anywhere. And I just like that the generation coming, the Gen Zs and we and everything, at least we did try our best to move away from there. I don't go stand make MPP gang gaslight me after 8 years and after 1 year of NDC, they can't gaslight me and all those things. I told you are mad. I witnessed it or I saw it all. But you know what I mean? Say, if NDC too know they do the right thing, make no call them out. Everything is too politicized and I hate it. I hate it so much. Nowhere in any serious country where your sector they bleed, your sector they suffer, and you comfortably be holding another position and another way they go get money for there. It's absurd. Like, it's absurd. Him leaving Cocoa Board, he'll be a quitter. It'll be a big stain of him on him. It's not only to his fault, right? This is an issue that is not just Ghana. I mean, the promise came from his bigger party, not just him, and he's trying to blah 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 and all those things. Already people they talk say you not be qualified or fit for the job, we didn't take you blah 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 and all those things. In that state, I am not going to give myself to the public to ridicule me or get a chance to talk about me at any point. Everybody knows how sensitive this topic about black stars is, because in the past we've given them money, done this, and you NDC now, you were the same people, 2014 World Cup scandal. It was you guys. So why you go give chance make and talk of this thing? And another thing I wanted to address is bad governance makes people think you can take, why are we paying TFA this money when hospital equipment and things are not? No. Every sector is accountable to their own thing. One could not try to do like, if you do that, you are doing the nation a disservice, and it'd be like you give other sectors cop out, especially the health sector. No, we know if you talk statement and go use GFA, sports authority money to go and give. No, we can say sports authority money. Why are your players stranded? Why are our athletes stranded here and they can't fly this? Why haven't the amputee team been paid? Why everything within the sports, we can criticize and tell us, why you go pay Ghana? Why you go pay committee this amount where you've not sorted out the hockey team, then be stranded here, you know, improve the infrastructure? Let's keep it within that. Not sports money going to health, going to roads. No. That not be why they do this.
Buy hospital bed sentences.
Those arguments, you know, my problem is there is no way in hell that you, your sector, they suffer, where you go join committee as a committee chairman and go take money for them and come back. Why you go? No, you don't go respect us. You don't go respect us. How many CEOs, Seth, they take $10,000 a month for here? How many they take? You go tournament 1 month, they come, they just take $60,000 for doing what? The team not get a psychologist. The team not get supporters union. The team not get assistant coaches and things. The team not get all these things. I remember how it was upset when this 2014 team came out, only for us to find out it's actually a privilege for some people to play for their national team. And it's not about their pay. Some people say they don't even get paid. But we went out there, we say, but it's not cause just the players. Me, I go play. Then you sit down. Me and you, they take the same winning bonus and pay. Why are you mad? Do you get the logic behind this? So that's what I'm saying. We've normalized corruption and stupidity, making it look like, Charlie, everything is job for the boys. Everything, we for do some. These people do some. Why? Nah. If we for cut them, we for call a spade a spade. So me, I'm not happy with this situation. And personally, I don't want to see him quitting Cocoa Board. I want him to sit there, work through the issue, unless then reshuffle him, then we know say that's different. He shouldn't quit. But the GFA one, dear. Because why can't you give these people $2,000 each? Why? What did they go do? They are glorified
changes. Why did they give them the work, then they do, then they want $2,000?
No, I'm just saying that if you do a budget, say, oh, like Stephen Appiah be senior, my former captain, they go do all this. Let's say you do them, and you give them all of them $2,000. Let's say you are paying them for job done because you give them position. You understand? So you are paying them salary or per diem or something. But all of them getting 62,000 for 1 month. That's crazy. That is crazy. Disband that nonsense committee with immediate effect. Yeah, I'm going to stay away. That's all I have to say.
So anyway, we've come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done this already, please follow our social media pages on Twitter, Instagram. And first of all, me, I always go call on Twitter. Some people they talk, see, me alone, I still call on Twitter. The team be X. For me, it be Twitter forever.
They can't tell us what to do.
So Twitter and Instagram is ATW Podcast GCR. On TikTok
is
after the whistle.
Me calling it XF means say I dey like the owner now. Nonsense.
So subscribe to the YouTube, share, like, comment, all those things. At least lately, I see that we are getting a lot, like this YouTube subscribership is going up like in a decent way. So we thank you for that, but it's not enough. Keep on subscribing and all of that. And as always, Spotify, Apple, we still did it. So if you still prefer audio, just go and subscribe there. Leave us a rating over there too, so that the algorithm can share the podcast to other people and all of that. So yeah, Charlie, guys, I know today is a very inconvenient time that we're recording, but you still managed to pull up. So when girl does it today, get plenty things good do. So
he don't hug like me, no, Charlie.
Be like if me pay away at chop before this episode. So we record after 9 PM on a Monday evening. So you guys for know the kind of sacrifices today. We don't make for you guys. So anyway, once again, Charlie, ATW dominates the conversation.